even if you're not a Bitcoiner, but you are out there championing for freedom and just personal freedoms for anybody and everybody, you are part of the Bitcoin network, period. And you don't ever have to touch Bitcoin, want to have anything to do with Bitcoin, but you are on our side and you are championing Bitcoin because you are championing freedom. And I think that's one of the things is like, we don't need to get everybody into Bitcoin, but we do need as many people as possible to value their personal freedoms so that that can't be taken away.
Welcome back to the Bitcoin Nova. Today, I have Aladdin with me from Bitcoin Trading Cards. Welcome to the show, Aladdin.
Thank you, Stacey.
Yeah, it's so nice having you here. I can't wait to learn all about your company. And I did see you guys at my first conference last year in Vegas, and it was so cool getting to see them in person. So I would like you to maybe tell us more about the company. Tell us about what you guys have created.
At the end of the day, we need to make Bitcoin as accessible and simple as possible for anybody and everybody to come in. I've watched 1,000 podcasts. I've studied Bitcoin. I've been in the space about 10 years. And the one thing I've noticed my whole time in is barrier to entry is incredibly difficult. We hear people talking about orange pilling friends and family all the time. And there's a million memes about the difficulty of it. So the trading cards, they were originally created to be a simple, fun orange pill for friends and family.
But that is a really great way to do it because, you know, there's so many people that are in the trading card world, even when it comes to things like Pokemon, just so many different collectibles that people are into. So yeah, that's a really great way for people to just enjoy the designs and, you know, want to collect more of them. So how many do you have? How many different collectibles? Are they considered collectibles at this point?
Yes, absolutely. Yes. Yeah. We've done quite a few. So to kind of tee it up, the trading card industry is very similar to the Federal Reserve. They're printing paper and the paper has value and they're printing unlimited amounts and there's no transparency. So I thought it was the perfect tie-in to be able to start teaching people about money in general with trading cards, because for a lot of people, the first transactions we have as kids is with our trading cards. We rip a pack at home. We've got our favorite cards. Stuff a handful of them in our back pocket, go to school, and then we're out on the playground making our trades and transacting with our friends. But most of us have no idea what the actual supply of what we're playing around with is. Very similar to the dollar or any dollar around the world. And what we created was, it's the Bitcoin of trading cards. So we are, as far as I can tell, the only 100% transparent trading card company that literally tells you absolutely everything we print down to the most common of common cards. And finite supply, you would think that this was more common. It's not. Trading cards are like, if it sells really well, for the most part, they will release more. So we created something, especially in the beginning. I've been an entrepreneur my entire life, and I knew that starting out, there's going to be ups and downs, lots of learning lessons. It's a crazy industry to try to really take off and become something very valuable and dialed in. So we started out very small sets. The first one we ever printed was like just under 9,000 packs, which is nothing in trading cards. And it went so well, unexpectedly, incredibly well, that we came out with series two of Orange Pill in a Pack, and we set 21,000 packs. So it's like once a year, 21,000 packs, new theme, new art, and that's our flagship. That's the main set that we do. And again, 21,000 packs is nothing. We are now, we just launched series four. And in between there, we did like BitBlock Boom packs. We did Unconfiscatable. We go to a lot of the conferences. I'm good friends with a lot of amazing people in the Bitcoin space. And when we put people on our cards, we get their blessing, permission, make sure that they love what we're doing. So we've gotten everyone from Michael Saylor to join in and be a part of it, which is amazing.
Yeah.
Because it's not just like us trying to use the name of Michael Saylor. We made sure that he liked what we were doing, liked the artwork that World of Rusty put together for him. Same Adam Back, Samson Now. I mean, we've probably laid out about the biggest and the baddest of Bitcoiners on the cards. And it's really cool because when you see them at a conference and you bring their card to them and have them sign it, they love it. It's not a surprise to them that like okay, who's using my name, they know exactly what's going on. So very small sense, but a lot of little sets that kind of commemorate the last 4 years of the Bitcoin space.
And it's like, you know, basketball cards and baseball cards, how you would go and get them signed by the athlete because you're a big fan of them. So you actually get to have the card and go to these conferences and, you know, have them sign something like that. So I love that that's what you mentioned is something that people do with them, because that's, you want to have a signed card. That's pretty amazing. And do you have stats on the cards too, or some kind of description of the people?
We will put just basic information about them on the back, enough that hopefully new people, there's been a lot of Bitcoiners that didn't know a lot of these people we put in the pack. So on the back, you're getting a brief little description. What is the contribution to Bitcoin that these people are playing? And then where do you find them? So if they have a website, social media accounts, everything's all on the back right there, so that you can go and find these people. And they're all vetted. I think that's a really big one, is you never know. People can go shady really quick. So we don't put anyone in the pack that hasn't been around for multiple years and proven that even if they potentially go down a different path in the future, what they have contributed to the space is valuable enough that they deserve to be represented in the card.
That's amazing. And so for each of the new card packs, since it's a limited supply, how do you do that with who's in new editions?
It's definitely a difficult job, because every set has to be curated perfectly. We have different categories that we've created with these cards. So you have the freedom category. It breaks down the importance of freedom, and you'll have different cards that kind of highlight that. We have tyranny, which kind of exposes some of the things that all people should be wary of. Economics, education, currencies, Bitcoin category, which is literally everything Bitcoin, teaching you what is the halving, what does finite supply mean when it comes to Bitcoin. All these little bits and pieces, it's like flashcards for Bitcoin and economics. And I think a lot of people can probably relate to our parents or maybe grandpa or someone that was listening to the radio back in the day, and he or she is listening to someone talk about economics. And as young kids, we're like, oh my God, this is the most boring shit I've ever heard in my life. It's probably one of the most boring topics. So with our cards, we really wanted to make one of the most important topics that anyone will ever learn, which is finance, fun. And I only was inspired by teachers when the teachers were fun and creative and made learning fun. If they didn't, it just completely went over my head and I had no interest. So I'm noticing, especially over the last 4 years since I've been going from conference to conference outside of the Bitcoin space, that basic financial education just doesn't exist. I homeschool my kids for that reason. They just do not provide any value when it comes to economics and financial education of the kids. There's many reasons why. I think a lot of Bitcoiners know. So finding a way to make that as simple and accessible to people as possible is incredibly important. And then you have things like, all right, I want to learn about economics. I want to learn about Bitcoin, but I listen to a podcast or I jump on Bitcoin Twitter and everyone's speaking a different language. I don't know what any of these words mean, because we speak in acronyms a lot of the time. So I've broken down the acronyms. What is DCA? What is FOMO, right? What is FUD? So all these little things, so that you can start to learn the language as well. And then when you do start to go down that orange pill rabbit hole, you've got a little bit of a thick skin kind of built up, ready to go. And it's been working really well that way. And for me, I look at it like, even if you never touch Bitcoin, you should probably understand basic economics. And even if you never understand basic economics, everyone should understand the importance of freedom. I say it all the time. If we don't have freedom, Bitcoin means nothing. I know that's a bad, hard take for Bitcoiners to hear, but it's facts. Without personal freedoms, Bitcoin is a CBD just like anything else, or CBDC. So we have to all come together and fight for our freedoms in order for Bitcoin to have any chance of doing anything more than just being a digital gold, which is great. But without freedom, we know they can take your gold as well. And people can say, well, they can never take my Bitcoin.
Yeah.
Good luck with that.
Right, exactly. It's some people still try to argue that they know what happened with the, what was it, 1979 or something, when they,
32 when they actually were seizing gold.
yeah, and they still try to argue that that could be done with Bitcoin. I'm like, well, you don't know enough about Bitcoin then to see why you think that could happen.
Well, it could though, to the degree that if the government comes in and says, we're taking away your right to bear arms, so no more firearms, which they've done to almost every country around the world. We are the last stand in America. And then they come in and say, like, we're literally going to wipe your house clean. When it comes to the government, they can do whatever they want to do. And yeah, you can keep your seed phrase and they would have to torture you and maybe you are torture resistant. But if they literally strip all of your freedoms, you can transact with other Bitcoiners with your Bitcoin that are going to help you out. But that's all you get because you cannot use the bank. There's like, so that's the thing I think a lot of Bitcoiners kind of dismiss is the government is total control. And as long as we have our freedoms, Bitcoin is the most beautiful money ever created. Without our freedoms, yeah, we're in a very difficult situation.
Yeah, and it's nice to teach people that it's not just the financial literacy aspect, it is about freedom. And that's why we choose Bitcoin, because we want that freedom and we fight for that freedom. So it's nice that you have like a freedom, section of people or freedom group of people, because then it's not, some people resonate with Bitcoin in different ways. Some people realize what money is, which is something that, yes, we should, that's one of the most important things you could learn in school, which they don't teach. But you need to, it teaches you about that. But then some people might find that boring, even if you're trying to make it fun. So they might like the whole freedom fighter aspect of it, knowing how much control government has over people. So that's a really great way to share different parts of what makes Bitcoin great and how it can give us a better future. But how do you think people have heard Jeff Booth say if Bitcoin stays decentralized and secure, then it wins? Do you see that there's anything Bitcoiners can do to be part of the strength of the network to keep us free as far as mining it, running a node or mining Bitcoin and providing to the network? Or is it more like, how do you stay free?
Yeah, I mean, in order to keep Bitcoin decentralized, yeah, we want to incentivize as many people to run their own node, as many miners as we can, even if it's your little nerd miner or your battle axe or whatever it is. You definitely want to try and get as many people using the network as possible, as many people holding Bitcoin as possible, even if that's people that are just holding 10,000 sats, 100,000 sats, getting that into as many people's hands as possible is part of strengthening the network. When it comes to the freedom aspect of it, the way that I think is, even if you're not a Bitcoiner, but you are out there championing for freedom and just personal freedoms for anybody and everybody, you are part of the Bitcoin network, period. And you don't ever have to touch Bitcoin, want to have anything to do with Bitcoin, but you are on our side and you are championing Bitcoin because you're a champion of freedom. And I think that's one of the big things is like, we don't need to get everybody into Bitcoin, but we do need as many people as possible to value their personal freedoms so that that can't be taken away. And then they can't take Bitcoin away.
I love thinking about it that way, that anyone who's on the side of freedom and fighting for freedom, you're already on our side. You're already on the side of Bitcoin and fighting for that truth and transparency and freedom, and that's the thing that CBDCs, people just don't understand about, other cryptos or especially CBDCs. It's just another form of the fiat system and it's another form of control. And that's not what we're in it for. We're not in it for the gains. Yes, over time, Bitcoin's price goes up. So that's what we're in it for too, for freedom of our own time in the future. We want to be able to have time to spend with our family and do things we want to do. It's amazing that that you teach people about Bitcoin only and people that fight for that freedom, and you're not trying to just let anyone into the game and put them all into the trading cards just because, they haven't shown that proof of work even, right?
And at the end of the day, one of the things I don't hear, excuse me, I don't hear Bitcoiners talk about enough, and that is how Bitcoin is like, so what Satoshi created is the perfect money. And it's all game theory for the success of Bitcoin. But there's no guarantee for Bitcoin success. And we have a lot of amazing, brilliant people that are a thousand times smarter than I could ever be talking about the inevitable success of Bitcoin. I do believe there is an inevitable success of Bitcoin in the way of number go up. I don't think it'll ever go to zero. I think we've already passed that chasm. And over time, Bitcoin's just going to keep climbing to the moon. But one of the things I like to ask is, if Bitcoin went to $1 million today, did we win? Was it successful on what most, not all Bitcoiners, but what most Bitcoiners see Bitcoin as being, around that freedom aspect, around it being a currency for the people? But if it went to $1 million today, how many people would never touch it that need it, that would use it unless they were maybe forced to? Because when I've been in Bitcoin long enough to know that when Bitcoin went to $3,000, it was too late. I missed the boat. And when Bitcoin went to $5,000, oh God, I missed the boat. And then $10,000, up, should have bought it at $3,000. And at $20,000, should have bought it at $10,000, and so on, all the way to where we're at right now. And at $120,000, because I talk to the everyday people all the time through the trading card conferences and everything I go to. And it's always, oh, I should have bought, then I missed the boat. And there's this bitterness that we all have, even Bitcoiners going, man, I wish I would have bought the dip a little bit harder back then. That would have been nice. So yeah. I see that all the time. And if we went to $1 million today, it would be great for the people that are holding Bitcoin.
Yeah.
It would be amazing. But for everyone else in the world, what does that do for them? I think there would be a lot of people very bitter, which is not the right way for them to feel. It's just lack of education and understanding. But I do believe the majority of people would say, I completely missed that boat now. I'm never getting it. And they would basically need to be forced to get into Bitcoin at that point in order to want to use it. They would go, because our brains shoot us in the unit bias. And that's why so many people back in, I think it was 21, when Shiba Inu and Dogecoin went to the moon. I can't tell you how many people were literally telling me, I own 100 million Shiba Inu and it's going to go to $1 million, or it's going to go to $1 someday. So that means I will have $100 million. And I would have to break down how that is completely impossible. We would literally need every single penny in the world, basically, to invest all of it into Shiba Inu, from our real estate to you name it. It's never going to happen. Dogecoin is going to go to this. XRP is going to go to $669 or whatever they're saying. No, it's never happen realistically. We're never going to put $180 trillion into XRP. Bitcoin is sitting at an average of $2 trillion today. And you really think in the next 5 years there's going to be like $160 trillion going into XRP?
Yeah, that's the crazy part about people, how little they understand about what money is, and about, you know, how you need to educate people, because all they just think is money can just be created out of thin air. There's no proof of work involved. They don't think of it like that because that's not what our system currently is. So they just think that if there's money that floats around everywhere, you could just get your hands on a bunch of cash. But it's like, there is a truth to how money should be created, how time and value should be, you know, converted. And that's what Bitcoin does, where everything else is just, it's even an exaggeration of our current system at that point.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, there's a lot of education that needs to be had across the world. And again, for me, in order for Bitcoin to be successful, it needs to be a money of the people. It needs to be inclusive to everyone. And we need to frame it up in a way that makes it a very simple barrier to entry for everyone to want to get in. I don't understand why we haven't pushed. And I know there's been a little marketing breakthroughs that have happened over time when it comes to Satoshis, but I could be totally wrong. But I think pushing our marketing as Bitcoiners out very heavily as buy Satoshis, and stop looking at it in the unit of account of you need to own one whole Bitcoin, because us Bitcoiners know every 10,000 Satoshis you're stacking is a very, very good investment. And 10,000 Satoshis is a couple bucks, and it used to be a couple pennies, and anybody and everybody can invest in 1,000 to 10,000 Satoshis at a time, at least in America. I do have friends from around the world, and I think us living in America, we don't quite understand just how impoverished third world countries are. to the point of there are some islands and some places that I think it's like $120 a year per individual. And that's their average US $120 a year. I have friends that I take care of.
$120 a year for what?
That's their entire, that's what they need to make a year in order to just live.
Wow.
But that's not living well at all. That's walking a mile a day to go get your water. That's a very, very crappy life for sure. In Indonesia right now, $100 to $300 a month is an average basic wage. U.S. $100 to $300 a month is an average wage. If you're making $1,200 a month U.S. in Indonesia, you're doing really, really well. So I work with graphic designers all over the world. And a graphic designer in Indonesia that makes $1,200 U.S., that is literally like top tier, most amazing college graduate graphic designer in Indonesia. And we kind of take these things for granted here. And then when it comes to like teaching people to stack sets, we have to be realistic how we are framing that up. So I can send $100 bonus to one of my artists in Satoshis. And I ask him, like, you still have that? You're still stacking, right? So send them a little bit here and there. And they go, no. I'm like, what do you mean? You're supposed to save it. They're like Aladdin. Like, that's literally enough money for me to take care of all these different things. Yeah, I would love to save it, but like, we got to live. We have to eat.
There's got to be a better way to find local Bitcoiners.
Unless you find Bitcoin, it's kind of like saving money died a long time ago.
Absolutely. Well, that's why the trading card industry right now is in the biggest bull market it's ever been in before. Prices of trading cards are through the roof. Most stores are completely sold out. And it's because people right now are looking for a place to put their savings, which is crazy. They're buying cardboard. So we're exchanging this paper money for cardboard trading cards. But the stock market is too confusing and too big for them. They don't want to get in. It's too risky, ups and downs. Bitcoin, I think most people just have no understanding of what Bitcoin is. And we are all the marketing arm of Bitcoin. I think that was one of the things I was trying to tee up before, that it's the game theory part of what Satoshi gave us is, here's this perfect money, but it's up to human beings to get it out there and make it work. If you really want it to be successful as this money of the people. But just like gold and silver, there's no marketing arm, there's no CEO, there's no president. What makes Bitcoin beautiful is the decentralization is also the most difficult human experiment that we're in right now with Bitcoin, because we all have to come together as Bitcoiners and supporters to market for Bitcoin. And one of the examples is we jumped out, not all of us at all, but a lot of Bitcoiners jumped out with the Donald Trump election. And regardless, I'm not political, I can't like any of it, but we as Bitcoiners, the community was so politically pushed towards electing Donald Trump because he's going to be better, and good, bad, or indifferent, or whatever that is. There are so many people around the world now that are literally like, that's Donald Trump coin. Donald Trump made Bitcoin. I mean, so many people are never willing to get into Bitcoin because they think literally Donald Trump made it. Wow. So again, regardless of however the Bitcoin community teed it up, we didn't explain well enough when we were pushing this political side of it to get it across that Bitcoin is for everybody. Mm-hmm. It is not right. It is not left. It's not libertarian. It's literally decentralized. And no one single person, group, or anything controls Bitcoin. But sadly, we are in this part right now where our PR team, which is all of us, didn't get the memo saying, hey guys, you need to slow down a little bit because it's coming off to so many people that Bitcoin is a Republican coin. And this is where the game theory comes into all of us. We have to come together as a community and have these discussions and try to find ways to explain Bitcoin to the masses, get Bitcoin education out to people in a way that a large company would. And this is why terrible cryptocurrencies are the ones that most people talk about, because they have a CEO, marketing team, and a PR team and all of that. So they're going at it in this dedicated way that most companies, if not all companies, go out and market, where Bitcoin is like all of us kind of gathered around trying to figure out how to explain what this is.
That's why Bitcoin is a grassroots movement, because it's people doing it as they join. You know, it's actual people talking about it, sharing with each other what they're building, and just teaching a little bit at a time. But yeah, it's a grassroots movement compared to a corporate movement. You know, it's not a marketing team, and it's, but it would be great if things like Donald Trump being, you know, creating Bitcoin, I didn't realize that was something globally that people maybe are under the assumption. Also, I heard the other day that somebody was under the assumption that Jeffrey Epstein created, he was Satoshi. He created Bitcoin and he was in the email saying he was Satoshi. And I straight up told him that's not a real email. And he was like, he just felt so like bashful almost that he was spreading misinformation, you know, because he believed it, you know, and there's these reels that get tons of views, you know. It's just people just hear one thing and it's a game of telephone, and the rumor is spreading, and people that don't know any better either think Trump created Bitcoin, Epstein, you know, this, you know, he, it's just even FTX, like a lot of people, when they heard about FTX, it was, I think, on purpose, so heavily marketed. So many of these marketing teams brought in celebrities and sports teams and named arenas after it, so that when it came crashing down, everyone associates Bitcoin with all these other cryptos.
Yeah, there was people that thought that Sam Bankman-Fried was the one that created Bitcoin. Literally, yeah. His company. Yeah, and that's where we have to understand just how early we are, how much education we need to put out, but how broken society is right now. Mm-hmm. So the people that think Bitcoin is a Donald Trump coin are the people that hate Donald Trump. So if they hear him associated with Bitcoin at all, then, oh God, they completely run. And the people that probably assume that Bitcoin was created by Epstein are probably really good freedom fighter people that have been down the rabbit hole and hate all the things that happened with all of that. And they hear Epstein and Bitcoin in the same sentence, and they're automatically going, oh my God, well, if Epstein had anything to do with Bitcoin, I'll never have anything to do with it. So this is just where society is right now. There's a lot of confusion, and social media is an absolute mess every way. And we all know the algorithm is pushing anything and everything to divide us and separate people and anger people. So it's
divide and conquer.
Huge battle. Yeah, it's divide and conquer all the way. Mm-hmm. It's happening in the Bitcoin space right now with Knots versus Core and everything going on.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, yeah. We're in a major battle mode right now.
Yeah, it's nice to see that there's some interesting things going on as far as talks of, and I know not a lot of people are, you know, in on this, but I think that there could be solutions going forward. And there's a lot of paralysis from the block size wars, where a lot of people just can't come together and agree on changes that should be made because there was this PTSD about it. But I feel like people are looking at that now, and they're thinking about it and knowing that it's an attack on, you know, influencing Bitcoin, and we're on the side of keeping it decentralized. That's all I like, keeping it decentralized and secure is the goal. That's the purpose. And there's enough people in Bitcoin. I mean, there's going to be more and more, but the people that are in it now are paying attention. You know, they're paying attention to what's happening, and they're, you know, someone like me who had never run a node before. I started running a node recently. And I am, even though I'm not, you know, a software engineer, I'm not a coder, I stand on the side of no spam on the blockchain. So I started running BIP110. So that is something I'm very proud of. I feel like I'm part of the fight for freedom. I love to spread the word about that. And, you know, it doesn't mean because you're not a coder, you don't understand the ethos of what Bitcoin is. The ethos is what matters, and the decentralization of mining is important. So it just feels good to be part of that fight. And just even knowing that that was one of the things that Epstein tried to maybe influence, was maybe not to use Bitcoin for his own gains, but maybe to divide and conquer and disrupt and, you know, offer influence in changes. And that's where I see that money was going for development. It's crazy to think that once you start finding this stuff out, you realize you're on the right side. I don't know. Yeah. And then even when it came to, you know, the whole Donald Trump thing, he is, I mean, wasn't it just the biggest slap in the face when you thought he was like, people thought he was the first Bitcoin president because he agreed with Bitcoin and then he came out with the Trump coin. I mean, and then rug pulled everybody. It was just, wow. You literally just, even when he would go to Bitcoin conferences and speak, all of us Bitcoiners would see it and we're like, oh, he's talking about Bitcoin. But it wasn't spread on mainstream media news. They weren't talking about Trump talking about Bitcoin. It was just to get votes, I think. Just to get 100%. Extra, you know? It wasn't like they were telling the world how much he's into Bitcoin. He did this Trump coin thing. And people, anyone who even doesn't know about Bitcoin, once they heard he had that, they're like, I got to support this guy, you know? And it was just sad. It was a big slap in the face.
It was a big slap in the face. Yeah. Writing mm-hmm. was on the wall at that point. Not in it for the right reason whatsoever.
Well, and that's like more and more how people find out truth as time goes on. People realize even when we believed in our system as much as to trust it fully, and then you realize things like you're not being taught about what finance is in school, sure. you know, and there is reasons for that. So then you realize that there are so many lies you're being fed over time. And that's why when you find Bitcoin, your whole life gets flipped upside down. Because you have to realize that you were wrong about everything you knew about the way the world worked. And that's why now with what's going on with Trump, there were so many lies and, you know, the president of peace. I'm not going to go to war. Now it's like he's a full-on warmonger. You know, talked about Bitcoin, came out with a shitcoin, first of all. There's so many things that he says that don't happen and are not real. So it's kind of, you know, more of that. Like, you have to realize you were wrong, you know, and admit you were wrong. And people have a hard time doing that. It's a really tough thing to look back and say, you know, to admit that you were fooled.
And that's the beauty of Bitcoin that we all need to gather around is trust the node, trust the code. Mm-hmm. Like, it, people are infallible no matter what, from our parents to our children. I mean, across the board, we are humans. We will make mistakes. And the beauty of Bitcoin is it's not controlled by one human. It's not controlled by a group of humans. This is the first time, I mean, gold and silver are the only other thing closest to it. Obviously, there's other precious metals, but there's a reason why gold and silver, it was the perfect money for 5,000 years up until Bitcoin. It's because there was no leader. There was no ruler. And anytime we think that we're going to get a human being, another human being that is going to save us, we put ourselves in a dangerous situation. And this is why the lack of education, the lack of family unity and everything that's being pushed in social media is to make us reliant upon the government, reliant upon other people. But really, every one of us has it built inside of ourselves to be self-sufficient and take personal responsibility for anything and everything that we do in life. And every person that reaches that level is it's a positive impact to society. And we need more of that as much as possible. And all of us need to stop thinking that there is any one savior that is a human being that mm-hmm. is going to save us. And we'll get a lot further, a lot quicker. And I think the other one is, like, we all have to be realistic of where things are in life. Being in Bitcoin for 10 years, I have been on the full-on maximalist side the entire time. I'm still a Bitcoin maximalist, mm-hmm. but I'm more of a freedom maximalist than anything. And after 10 years, I'm finally coming to the point where I'm like, you know what? We have to understand that people are going to do what people are going to do. And there's probably never going to be this utopian situation where every single person in the world is brilliant, kind, caring, loving. We know with the Epstein files, there are despicable, mm-hmm. vile people on this earth, and they're not going to stop producing those people. They will still come whether we like it or not. So when it comes to how Bitcoin succeeds, and not just succeeds as number go up, and all of us that were smart enough to find Bitcoin, lucky enough to have a family member take the time to teach us about Bitcoin, there is luck to it as well. I know as Bitcoiners, we all want to say, no, everyone gets Bitcoin at the price they deserve. I don't like that. I think that, okay, so you have one individual and they've been telling their brother-in-law forever about Bitcoin. But how did they tell them? Were they rude about it? Did they talk over them? Did they tee it up in a way that the brother-in-law just could never quite understand? Or did they come in with compassion, take the time, and continue to gently tell their loved one about Bitcoin until their loved one was finally like, okay, yeah, I think I finally get it. And then they get in. That's luck to a certain degree that they had a family member that was kind enough to not give up on it and continue to push.
And it's also luck in the way that so many of us talk to Bitcoin or talk about Bitcoin with so many people constantly. But sometimes I've thought about that at my job because I'm a hairdresser. And I've talked about Bitcoin for the last few years to clients. And I get burnt out after a while. I only talk to people who seem like they're reciprocating and asking questions. I only answer questions. I don't like to push it on anybody. Yeah. But there are some times where I just don't even bring it up. But for some reason, something somebody says gets me to want to bring it up lately. Because otherwise, I just tell them I have a podcast. Go watch it. Because yeah. I'm just done. I'm like bored with trying to like repeat myself. But there are some days where I just bring it up to somebody and it really feels like it clicks with them. And they're like, thank you so much. No one's ever told me about this stuff. Thank you for telling me. And I'm like, it was almost like luck. Like it was meant to be. Like I decided to talk to you specifically because for what? Why? What did you say that made me think you're struggling or maybe you need some help and maybe things are tough for you or, you know what I mean? You have a family and kids. And when I hear that, I think you should really, you know what I mean? Like there's just certain things that I feel like they might hear me. You know, they actually will listen. And yeah, that's absolutely right. Like, it's like, not everybody always wants to talk about it to every person they meet. So it just so happens that you might run into a Bitcoiner and they will share their time with you.
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, the cards that I made, we have Genesis packs.
Mm-hmm.
So these confuse a lot of people because they get them and they think they're going to get this chase card or something crazy in here. This is a $3 pack of trading cards. And inside here is encyclopedia of Bitcoin. You have podcasts, you have movies, all the greatest vetted tidbits to get on your Bitcoin journey. And I literally leave these as tips. We leave them all over the place. We put them in vending machines and we put them everywhere.
Wow.
Leave them all over the place. And there's been amazing Bitcoiners from all over that literally put them everywhere. You have the little book boxes that are around neighborhoods and you just go put them in book boxes. Luck maybe that you found one of those packs and opened it up and actually like read it and you're like, this is a
sign.
Where did this come from? So all of those little pieces that I think we kind of overlook when we're saying everyone gets Bitcoin at the price they deserve. Another like maybe unpopular opinion is toxic maximalism.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that is really good when you're jumping down the throat of a shitcoin shill, mm-hmm. right? We need toxic maximalism for that. But we also put a lot of toxic maximalism out to people that just buy shitcoins.
Mm-hmm.
But unless they're shilling that shitcoin, they're a victim.
Yeah.
They don't understand money. They don't understand what they bought.
Mm-hmm.
And most likely they watched a podcast or listened to somebody that told them they're going to get really, really rich if they buy this coin. And yeah, they made the mistake of not doing their own research, but that's like almost everyone on earth is taught to not do their own research with public.
And it's because like you said, yeah, you said earlier that people think they missed the boat, but that's the education that's lacking there because yeah. It's like they think Bitcoin's already this price. How much higher could it realistically go? But when you realize the supply schedule release and where we're at in the you know total amount of Bitcoins, it's trickling out over the next 100 years. So it's just, and when you have that supply and demand thing, that's what they need to learn. You know, they need to learn that this isn't like the rest. You know, if money is going to flow into anything, all of the money in the world, like you were talking yeah. about real estate and all that stuff, gold. It's not going to flood into XRP. You know, it's going to flood into the immutable, the decentralized network of the future. It's not going to just go into some coin that people aren't trusted because nobody trusts anyone these days. Like we're all losing trust. And that's why I kind of wanted to come back to what you were saying about trust in no one human's going to be our savior, right? But I think people have a lot of fear about Bitcoin because they think that what's scarier than trusting a human to save us is trusting AI, which will take over the world type of thing. So they associate Bitcoin. I think a lot of people think of Bitcoin as this technology money and AI, and they think, oh no, now we're going to be like slaves to AI or something like that. But I think I'm just on the path of CBDCs being that tool to control people, and Bitcoin would be the money of freedom and something that even AI isn't able to manipulate or change. So it's not that you should be afraid of, you know, AI being the new having to trust in a human, but trusting in this machine. Bitcoin isn't that machine you should be scared of.
Yeah. And if anything, if AI is 100 or 1,000 times smarter than any human being, it's already been proven where it's at today is AI chooses Bitcoin over anything. And that should tell you something right there. Like if this computer is smarter than any human being on Earth and it chooses Bitcoin, that should mean something to all of us right now. If AI uses a money, it's going to use Bitcoin. So there's another sign. But yeah, I mean, all of this is like the world is in a very, very, society is in a very broken space right now. Mm-hmm. And the number one thing every human being needs right now, more than anything, is compassion. Mm-hmm. And back to the toxic maximalist thing and just being a maxi in general, be that. And this is why I changed the name from Bitcoin to Based, because to be based is to have an opinion and stand there in confidence and not worry about other people saying, I don't like your opinion, I disagree with your opinion. That's great. You have the right to your opinion, but I'm going to stand here with my opinion. I'm not going to force it upon you. It's just how I feel, whether it's God or whatever it is. This is how I feel. These are my values, and I'm going to stand with my values. So we need to, the best we can with just being human beings to other human beings right now, is to be based, but do it as gently as possible and not try to shove our thoughts and opinions on other people. This is why a lot of people say, well, Bitcoin's like a cult, because we are so, and I am hardcore that way, gung-ho Bitcoin. My kids, 10 years, they're like Bitcoin, 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 everything, because that's all.
Same with mine.
Yeah, my daughter's 5 years old, and anytime she sees a B anywhere, it's like, So yeah, it's definitely very strong in my house, to say the least.
Discreet, durable, the ultimate security. Visit microseed.io and use code NOVA for 5% off your order.
We're just all connecting and building and doing our things and trying to ignore noise. And we're sharing our voices and our thoughts about the injustice of the world and the censorship and the loss of freedoms in the world, and just and the like the compassion that we have for people who haven't found, you know, out what's wrong with the world really at a base level. We're just trying our best to not be a cult, because we're trying our best. We feel like that, I guess, at times, but we're not out there marketing and promoting. Yes, we could do more, maybe like to combat some of the misinformation. But then I guess the fact that we don't do that and we kind of just share it organically, and whoever finds it by luck or whatever the reason, you know, finds your cards, it just happens that that's why it grows the way it does. And then those people spread it to their families, you know, in the way that hopefully they do it in a non-pushy way. And, you know, but I think the best thing is when you see somebody who just gets it and they've been in it a while, you're not, you kind of live by it, you know?
Absolutely. I think a big one that I've seen over the years, I've got actually my friend that didn't introduce me to Bitcoin, but me and him went on the Bitcoin rabbit hole together many, many years ago. And he's so smart, but he's too smart. And we go out and he'll be trying to orange pill people. And he goes from 0 to 100 right away. I mean, he's trying to fit in 1,000 hours of podcasts in 3 to 5 minutes.
Yeah.
Literally goes right over their head, and it's far too much. Where what I've been learning, especially just in trading cards alone, is right now, collectors don't know the difference between a toy, a collectible, and an asset. Mm-hmm. They are literally buying toys expecting it to be like an asset, and they don't understand supply and demand. They don't understand an asset versus a liability. All these just basic concepts of money. So how are you ever going to get them to understand the importance of Bitcoin if they don't even know supply and demand, if they've never heard the word market cap before, or they've never heard the word finite, scarcity? To us, it's like, oh yeah, well, I mean, it's the most common word in my vocabulary for sure. I use it all the time, but most people don't. Like literally most people don't know what scarcity means. Ask them to give you the definition of scarcity. A lot of people won't be able to give it to you. Ask people to give you the definition of finite. Most people will not be able to give it to you.
Wow.
This is where we just need to come in as Bitcoiners and curate our orange pill and make sure that we don't go too light on the people that we know probably do get those words, because we don't want to come off like arrogant to them. Mm-hmm. Talking like we feel like we're talking over their heads. We're talking to them at first grade math when really they're already graduated. So it's literally every person that you're pitching Bitcoin to, because it's something brand new and there's so many components to it, we really have to get to know the person at least a little bit before we spout off our Bitcoin pitch to them, because that's really what it is. And I think at the end of the day, if we really want to win in the way of getting as many people into Bitcoin as possible, it's making Bitcoin as fun as we possibly can. So like Bitcoin conferences, I've been doing conferences my whole life. Anybody out there listening right now, I want you to just close your eyes and envision, if you've ever been to a concert, close your eyes and envision one of your favorite concerts and that band rocking out, and there's literally 1,000 people or 10 or 100,000, depending on the size of the concert, and the band is rocking out and you're all bouncing to the beat at the same exact time. Everybody together, the same time, you're all bouncing up and down. That vibe, you're all in sync. That's at that awesome moment. This is what we need in the Bitcoin space. We need these conferences to invite some rock stars out. I mean, Creed, Can You Take Me Higher? That's like one of our anthems for Bitcoin, right? Well, we spend a lot of money at these conferences. Go get Creed to come and play. Have that live Creed right there with all of us bouncing up and down. And you want to go viral with Bitcoin? Those are viral moments. That's where people outside of Bitcoin are going to go, damn, dude, those Bitcoin look hella fun. Holy shit. We have to be fun and inviting that way. And people will resonate with that far more than, oh, Bitcoin conference. That's like people literally on stage for 8 hours a day while you sit in a chair and you take notes. For us, we love it because we're absorbed and you can't get enough. But for people outside of Bitcoin, not happening. I mean, you can't even get them to watch a podcast. They're hoping a 30-second. And my wife is even one of those where I love my wife, but she's like, 30 seconds, honey. Give me 30 seconds at a time and I'm in. And she's very aware of a lot of things, but kids, life, family, she doesn't have the time to sit around, in her mind at least, for an hour and a half, 2 hours, and listen to Jeff Booth and screaming kids here and everything else. And she's just going to hone down and listen to Jeff Booth. It's amazing if you find that time and you get there. But most people, they have to come in and be inspired first. And once they're inspired, you know, I know I wasn't inspired before Bitcoin. And then it inspired. Mm-hmm. Now I'll literally listen to Saifedean's The Bitcoin Standard. I've listened to it like 20 times. And my wife's like, you're the biggest nerd in the world. How can you do that? I'm like, because it's so good. But it takes a long time to get the inspiration for someone to go, I'm going to literally absorb thousands of hours of these podcasts because it is so good.
Oh, that is amazing. I think that that's what reminds me of, I mean, having fun with it is something that reminds me of this past weekend at, you know, it wasn't a conference, but it was this new place that's opening in Chicago where we're at. It's, you know, how some of these places have Bitcoin hubs, like Bitcoin places that you, you know, people get together and work on things and stuff like that. So in Chicago, there's a restaurant by Bitcoiners, and it's a Bitcoin Collective workspace upstairs, but the downstairs is a restaurant with a nice bar and like a Bitcoin feel and like some Bitcoin decor, but it's just opening right now. So we had like a mini show this past weekend. My husband's a singer and he sang there, and we invited a few friends, and it was a small get together, probably like 20 people or less. But that's the kind of thing, because he's just got this this sound? I mean, I know he's my husband, but when I talk about his voice, people are like, oh, it's just because he's your husband. You're being, you know, but I'm like, no, when people hear him, they're like, he's really good. Like he's got this voice, you know, that's crazy. So he was singing and it was just something that he just did it because, you know, he wanted to, it was his first show with a new guitar player that he has. So they were trying out their first like kind of practice show together. And it was this place's first, like, you know, they haven't really, besides like an open house type thing to start, they haven't had a real event. But just hearing him play and seeing Bitcoiners there, but also some of our friends that came out that are not Bitcoiners being in the same place and trying the food, you know, the chef was there making some food for us, even though it's not fully open yet. And having everyone come together and just seeing that it was kind of special, very special, because this place isn't being built during some kind of crazy top of Bitcoin price. It's not a bull market. It's considered kind of a time where people are looking at it like, oh my gosh, it's dropped, you know, and they're kind of afraid. But just for people that aren't into Bitcoin to come there and see what's being built by Bitcoiners and seeing us all together and happy and we're not worried, you know, we're actually just enjoying ourselves and having a great time together. That is the kind of thing that they look around and they're like, wow, you know? And then just that was the part, it just gives me chills, like having fun with it. And it was the most amazing night and people were paying for their sandwich, like the food he was making in Bitcoin. And then it was just even one of my husband's friends that came. I just texted my husband to ask who somebody said he sounded like yesterday because I couldn't think of the guy's name, but somebody that was listening is like, he sounds just like Chris Cornell. So I'm like,
beautiful. That's one of my favorite artists. Yeah.
Is it? Yeah. I was like, yeah, he's so good. I couldn't think of it. I'm just brain freeze. But his friend was there talking to someone at the bar. And, you know, he said that he was trying to tell him about the gold and the inflation. And he was like, I just don't get it, you know? And he goes, I just don't get it. And I go, maybe I'll give it a try. So he was, you know, he was like, okay, whatever, we'll see. And then after a little while, I went over and sat by him and I'm like, all right, what are your questions? You know, like, do you have questions? So just, I think that's part of the fun too, is like people want to be heard and they want to know that if I have questions, are you listening to the things I am asking? And then I try to answer almost like a child, like kids have short attention spans.
Yep.
So you have to answer their question and then stop.
Yes.
And then wait for the next question. So he was doing that. He was just answering, and he wanted to know what's next. This is what I have on my mind. And I would try to answer, no, sure, you know, so that we can go on and enjoy the show. I'll answer your questions, give you some sort of, but I think the thing for him that really clicked was because, like you said, you have to get to know who you're talking to. The thing that really, once I said it, he repeated it. And I knew that that was the thing that really resonated with him was the grassroots movement type thing.
Yeah.
Because that was what he felt was something that mattered to him, you know, so. But it was cool answering questions instead of just talking at somebody because they lose interest. You know, you need to give them room and be there. And part of the fun is like they feel like they're being heard. You know, they don't want to be talked at, you know, so
yes.
That's just my experience from what this past week.
Advice. And that's what most people take it as. You're giving me financial advice. And even though we're not, there's a part of it that is to a certain degree. So people get very defensive, like, even my friends, they're like, who are you to give me financial advice? My dad, like, not taking financial advice from my son. So there's all of these things that we have to be cognitive of when we are trying to talk to people about Bitcoin. You hit it. You want to let them ask the questions. When you empower them to be the ones driving the conversation, they have this power and they will be a lot more open to listening to what you have to say because you're letting them run the conversation. So you hit it spot on there. Perfect.
Thank you. Yeah, it felt like a great moment. I was like, and I didn't continue trying to be like, all right, this is how you buy it afterwards. I just like let him be. Like you can come to your own conclusions at this point. Next time we talk, you can ask me more questions if you have them, but you have to let it sit. You know, you can't, I think people when they're ready to, and maybe when something in their life, that's how I got orange pilled. My cousin would talk to me about it all the time. He talked about it with all the family. But he mentioned it to me every so often. I would cut his hair. He would come in and talk about Bitcoin. But until it was something that mattered in my life, once COVID hit and we got stimulus checks, I was looking into how much money the government can print and how much will they send out to people. And when I found out there was no limit, I mentioned it to him the next time I saw him. And he just said to me that, you know, that's why your savings has less purchasing power now. Whatever you've been saving now is worth less. And it just all made sense to me, the supply and demand thing. But it happened when I started to wonder about my kids' future and about what's going on in the world right now with this stimulus stuff and with the, you know, I started to wonder because of the crisis. And I think crisis, and that's why now with all the stuff going on in the world, this is probably like wave two from the time I got into Bitcoin of the next moment of Bitcoiners or people realizing something's broken and looking for answers.
Yes.
Because something is wrong, especially now. I mean, you're seeing a lot of cover-ups and, you know, lies. And it's like, those are the types of things you start to ask questions when you start to be thinking that you're being had, you know, that's how people want to come into it. So I think this is a moment where people do, you know, like finding those cards, it would be somebody who's just looking for an answer and feeling like a sign. So I love that you do that.
Bitcoin is our safe space, right? It's what gives us solace at night to go, okay, everything's chaotic, everything's crazy, but I've been stacking sats, and that is our hope, right? That's the big mm-hmm. thing we're all looking for is hope, and Bitcoin gives us hope.
Mm-hmm.
So we need to be that community. We need to be that safe space that mm-hmm. when people come in, they're like, wow, all of you people are very optimistic. Even though we're hyper aware of what's going on, we are the optimistic ones. Because we have Bitcoin and we have the hope that Bitcoin is going to be that thing that helps to start healing humanity in the world by bringing that decentralization in. So that's what our community needs to be. That's the marketing that we all need to be putting out, is that hope, right? People mm-hmm. coming in. When people start buying trading cards, they come for the trading cards, they stay for the community. They get into these little Pokemon clubs or sports clubs. They start going to these trading card events and they're like, oh, you're my people. And they find a community.
Mm-hmm.
People come to Bitcoin for Bitcoin, but I'm sure you and majority of people can say, I stay because of the community.
Yes.
These are my people. And I spend my time here because these are my people. I found mm-hmm. my people. That's what keeps us around. Without that community with Bitcoin, we wouldn't be anywhere near as involved. We wouldn't be buying the dip together. We wouldn't be like smash buying the dip or mm-hmm. smash buying 100,000, like Bitcoin at 100,000, just because it's fun. Whether you buy $5 or a dollar or whatever it is, we're all together doing it. This is what we need to really create, is this massively inclusive community that has the optimism and the hope. And we are opening and welcome to everyone. I don't care if you're shitcoiner.
Mm-hmm.
Come on in. Like, even if you're still buying them, when I tell people about altcoins, because almost every person asks when they come into Bitcoin, I don't go down these long, drawn out discussions about how terrible they are or anything. I break it down to where they're at. Very simple. Bitcoin is an investment. Everything else, cryptocurrency wise, you're gambling. And if you go into the casino and putting money in slot machines, you might enjoy cryptocurrency.
Right.
Just want to be very, very clear that Bitcoin is an investment and all of that is gambling. And anytime you're buying into those, just make sure in your mind it goes in and you're thinking very clearly, this is a gamble and I am specifically gambling. And as long as you know that when you're doing it, that's the only education we need to give them. It doesn't need to be more than that, because anything more detailed, you're going to lose them. So keep it stupid simple. You want to buy cryptocurrency, you are, and just leave that. And if we can start to build these kind of very inclusive, laid back, that awesome older brother or older sister that you always admired, they always had their shit together, they always had the hot relationship and the hot car, and they pulled up, or your uncle or aunt, we all have that person in our life, right?
Yeah.
That we looked at when we were kids and went, man, they're so cool. That's what we really need to be as Bitcoiners. And what made them so cool? They were just nice. They weren't bully. They weren't mean. They were always the one that came in smiling and everyone wanted to be around them. I know it's difficult with the world the way it is right now, but if we really want to win this massive battle we're in, Bitcoin needs to be that community that everyone wants to be a part of.
Yeah. And it just, I feel like it can be that way because it changes our state of our you know, our mental state and our hope for the future. So you do exude that energy when you enter a room. You know, it does feel like that the more you know. And yeah, and it just feels like you're like the trading cards are such a bridge to that education, to the community. And if you don't already have a card for Club Orange, I don't know if you do.
I don't yet.
But Club Orange is the way that I found the people that I'm organizing with in real life. And I could see that when you're talking about these concerts, it doesn't only have to be at a Bitcoin conference. I'm thinking about it like there's parades for everything. Why don't we have like Bitcoin parades in different cities? Why don't we have, you know, and I think the way that we have these events, I have found, I know there's other apps out there, but for Club Orange, it's Bitcoin only. It keeps out the spammers because of this, you know, this paywall that there is for you know, this lifetime membership.
Hey, you but talk I love Orange Pill app.
Yes, yes.
Yes, of course. No, Orange Pill app was in series two, and yes. Mateo's a good friend of mine. No, I'm yes. sorry, Club Orange. I'm old know. School, all the way back to the Orange Pill app. But yes, it's amazing.
I love Mateo. I
recommend it. Yeah.
Yes. And I think that that's why you're all about community, and he's a good friend of yours, and he's an amazing person. And I love Club Orange because it has connected me to people in real life, which when you hang out in real life and people are doing the things that they're doing, like building a restaurant that's a Bitcoin restaurant with Bitcoin people, you know, other people will come in and see that. And, you know, and then you host events there and other people would be around. And that's the type of thing that more and more people are doing in real life. So you're not just building communities only online. You're what Mateo's doing is getting people offline and getting people to, you know, actually connect in real life where other yes. people can see that, you know, they can see the way that people are engaging with each other and how they are and how they behave. And it's not this like shilling type of mentality. It's just like a bunch of good, smart people getting together, building a better future. So I love that. I'm so glad you had him in series two. And that is so cool. I'm like, he has to be in there. You know, I just didn't know if you
yeah,
did
it's
have
old school. It's back when it was Orange Pill app. So that'll be wow. an even more valuable and popular card because it was before the name change.
Wow. Yeah, that's amazing. I think it's such a community is everything. And I think that it's so these online communities, great, but like regular people that haven't gotten into it, they're not just going to most of the time, they're not going to just stumble into a different algorithm. People are so stuck in their algorithms. They're just they yes. want to keep getting fed the same stuff they've been fed. They're not going to usually, you know, luck won't have it that they'll find, you know, unless we have these great marketing teams that get outside these echo chambers too much. But that's the goal of my show is to try to sort of get out there and talk about different topics that might kind of like get somebody to want to pay attention, you know, a little bit. But as far as real world, you know, real world is kind of where things happen. And I think that would be, it would just be really cool to see more in-person events and Bitcoiners and no corners connecting and just, you know, seeing that world.
Yeah,
but yeah, no, your trading cards are a way that people could find something like that and say, oh, I never knew about such a thing. What is this? You know, and find Club Orange or Orange Pill app.
Absolutely. I mean, I took that and ran with it this year. I found a social media account called Maximal Nostalgia. Mm-hmm. And anyone out there, check it out. It's amazing. Maximal Nostalgia. And he does use AI. The creator is brilliant, and he's been able to create these videos about the 70s, 80s, and 90s, and it just literally takes you back in time. I'm a lot older, so I grew up in the 80s and 90s, and it gave me this feeling of before the phones, the digital detox, when we were more present, communities meant more. So I reached out to him and said, I want you to literally just be my social media guy. He's like, that's not what I do. And I kept bugging him and bugging him. Well, now I have him and he works full time for me. And we're creating specifically on like Instagram and Facebook and YouTube, these 1980s, 90s nostalgic videos that have nothing to do with Bitcoin whatsoever. I know a lot of people are going, okay, what the heck is going on with Based? It has nothing to do with trading cards. It has nothing. Mm-hmm. Bitcoin, why are they in this nostalgic run when their company is Bitcoin and trading cards? Well, right now we're hitting an average of about 3 to 4 million impressions a month, and we just got started. We're gaining 100 to 200 new followers with every single post that we put out.
That's amazing.
These are people that want, obviously, like that feeling of before the digital world took over everything. And we have to start looking at it that way of like, who is our closest and easiest friends and community? Who's the closest community to Bitcoin so that we can start bringing them in? Well, gold and silver. And when gold and silver was pumping, I saw a lot of Bitcoiners out there doing this battle back and forth over like, who's going to pump bigger and who's better. I think that's terrible. Please, Bitcoiners, stop. We need to be incredibly inclusive to the gold and silver people. They just don't understand Bitcoin yet, but they do understand finite supply and hard money. So we need to be as inclusive to them as possible because they're the closest thing to a Bitcoiner we have. And then cryptocurrency people, not the ones shilling crypto, but the ones that are in it. They are looking for an investment that is better than the dollar. So we need to be inclusive and bring them in. And then we have people that are looking at nostalgia and wishing for a time that was better before all of this chaos of where we're at today. Next closest community. So we need to start looking at it that way and garnering people from communities that are literally like our neighbors. Mm-hmm. They have the same kind of neighborhood as us. They don't need to be our enemy in any way, shape, or form. They're our neighbors. Start bringing them over. And as Bitcoiners, bring them a pie. Ask them if they need sugar. These are the things we need to start doing and being open. And we will start to grow the Bitcoin community massively. And if you're a Bitcoiner and you still buy gold and silver, good for you. There's nothing wrong with it. You're a Bitcoiner and you still gamble once in a while. Guess what? The majority of Bitcoiners that go to the conference in Vegas, I saw them on the floor gambling. It's okay to be a Bitcoiner and gamble. That's what a lot of Bitcoiners do. There's no difference between sitting in a slot machine, dumping money, or playing blackjack at a table and buying some shit coins. It's all gambling. So as long as they're going, hey, why are you walking by? You should come and play blackjack. Why are you not gambling? Yeah, that's wrong. And they should be slapped across the top of their head for doing that. But other than that, just people are going to do what people are going to do. And it's okay to be a Bitcoiner and be a vegetarian. Like it's okay to be a Bitcoiner and not understand all the things that being a hardcore Bitcoiner gets. Like it's all baby steps. And these things where we just need to be, and I'll stop my rant, we need to be as inclusive as possible and just open Bitcoin up for everybody. It's not a one-sum game of this is, you have to do everything that we do or you're not a Bitcoiner.
Yes. I love that. And that's called, you need to share the link with me so I could share it with everybody, but it's called Base, you said?
Maximal Nostalgia.
Oh, Maximal Nostalgia. Okay. I had that written down. I wanted to take notes too, just so I can make sure. I have to try to find it in the episode. Yeah. So yeah, I'm going to be sharing links of all of that stuff. But also, yeah, I love this idea is right where you're at with me, with making things fun and reaching new people. Again, not because you're forcing it on them, but just who happens to come across it too. It's kind of like, you know, just that luck thing. I love that. That's kind of the theme of that, is just because you can't force it. You can't make them listen. They just have to be open. But one of the things that I do with my channel is I kind of have a separate channel that I have a panel style show that me and my husband and a couple others, we just kind of laugh the whole time and we just talk about the most random things, but we tie it back to Bitcoin occasionally, but we're just either reacting to videos and just they're the funniest people ever. I just kind of laugh with them, but we're just, it's kind of this banter that's just fun online with all the craziness in the world. It's people that might just come in and think they're hilarious or we're funny, you know, and then just occasionally just hear a sprinkle of Bitcoin in and out, or just truth of the world and random things, but we just make fun of things, you know. So it's just like a great way to just have a different style of show that's not just your typical podcast too, which I love. Anything that is just fun is something that people would be, you know, attracted to and just be able to want to stay a little bit longer and hear what some people have to say, because it's you know, it can't just be financial talk over and over again, you know. And and I think that the fact that you're a parent too is something that you understand as far as keeping things simple. You know, you know, when you have kids, you can't be talking for a straight hour. They're not going to pay attention. So it's like teaching new things to people is like teaching it to children. So more parents spreading Bitcoin knowledge is great too.
Absolutely.
Yes. So, you know, thank you so much for joining me today. I cannot wait to share this episode with people. And I love that. I mean, first of all, where can people find you? What's the website? So I'm going to link it in the episode too, but
basetradingcards.com.
Basetradingcards. Okay, perfect. Yeah, that is a super fun way to get into Bitcoin. And I love that you have Club Orange, Orange Pill App, Mateo in there. And tons of other Bitcoiners who have done so much to educate people and spread Bitcoin, you know, hope and knowledge and all that stuff. So thank you for what you're doing building in Bitcoin. And thank you so much for joining me today and talking about all this incredible stuff about how to orange pill people, how, you know, just everything that's hopeful for the future and having a good time with it.
Absolutely. Now, thank you for having me on. Really appreciate it. You're doing amazing things. You're going at it the right way. Don't make everything all about Bitcoin and you're going to get a lot more people to come in. So I love that about it. You'll have to, after the show, send me a link to your show so I can share it.
Of course I will. Thank you so much. Yeah, it's really nice to try to, you know, encourage more people to talk to, because I would have never started a podcast, but I'm so happy I did. And it hopefully is reaching, even if it's, you know, one person every so often, I'm just happy to reach out there and you know, bring someone else into this awesome future, you know, that we have growing. So thank you so much for joining me today, and have a great day.
Thank you too. Thank you, everybody.